session number 31425, Mr. Mick Gagan, Reel 8. Now, what happens next then? You've passed out, you've got this signalling qualification, you're a signal. You've got the badge and everything. And so, what's your posting?
Well, I didn't know where I was going to be posted to, because being artillery, they sent to so many camps and everything like that. But a week later, I heard that I was going to the 124 Royal Field Regiment, Royal Artillery, down in Lark Hill, Wiltshire. That was the Royal School of Artillery. So I was going there for training, as I'd been picked for some special training at the School of Artillery.
And that was with 124 Royal Field Artillery. Which battery? Or were you not in one?
There was a battery. I can't remember what battery it was. But the whole regiment was disbanded at the beginning of 1948.
And you joined them when? August?
I joined the it must have been the end of July or something like that, yeah.
So, now what happened when you got there? What was the setup there?
Well, the regiment was already established. The regiment was already established. I think what had been going from since the beginning of the 39 War. And they were the regiment what were doing all the firing on the ranges. They were the service regiment for that area.
Demonstration.
Yes, and also for training all officers from all different, even different countries, with training officers in gunfire, artillery procedure, everything like that. And we'd even have aircraft targets coming over and everything. And I was assigned to the signal section of the battery, which entailed going out practically every day. They were out practically every day on schemes over Salisbury Plains, and I was mostly put in the OP section, observation posts. And
tell me exactly what your duties were then as a signaller with an OP post.
Well, you go into the OP. You'd set up all your sets and everything.
How'd you do that? Where would you put an OP? I mean, you wouldn't be deciding that, but I mean, where would they put it?
Well, the OPs were already made on Salisbury Plains. The OPs were concrete and everything. So you're going there for training. Sometimes you may go out and you'd have to go into a woods or something like that. But mostly the OP, because you had officers there training, you may have a dozen officers in that OP with you. And you've got to go in there, you learn the basic principles of calling gunfire down, the map reference, how near to a target you've got to go.
Now, were you learning this, or was that what the officers were learning?
No, I was learning it as well. I was learning everything. I had to learn everything. And then I'd be put on a set, and then the gunfire would come down, and you'd call out for right ranging. Perhaps you'd have a fixed target somewhere. You're calling down right ranging. And one of the main things which I think I excelled at was seeing where the gunfire landed, because one day we got even had Egyptian officers training there with us. And I'm on the set and I've called down gunfire and the officer was standing there. And I shouted out, "Stop firing." And he looked at me. But I'd noticed that, you know, it's a way away. It could be a quarter of a mile away where the shells are landing. But one shell was landing short. And I've called out, "Stop firing, check elevation." And they've checked elevation. And the number three gun was just a degree below. And he had dropped down. And the officer congratulated me on it. And he said, "Well, how did you do that?" I said, "Well, if that we'd been calling down gunfire so near to our troops," I said, "it could have been our own troops what got that shell." And it was, you know, and I did most training in the OP. Sometimes I'd be in the gun position. Sometimes I'd have to go out and lay cables, telephones, because we'd have different people here and there. And you'd have to go down and lay the phones for them to keep in contact with you, because you may have an OP and someone has got to go out. They couldn't carry a wireless set or something like that, and they're looking over like enemy positions, but they've got a telephone, so they're phoning you up in the OP, telling you exactly where they are, and you're transmitting fire orders to the back to the battery. And this is how it went on. And then I had to go back to the gun positions, and then sometimes, a couple of times, they had a whole regimental shoot, and I was put into the mobile command post as the signaller for the whole regiment. So I think my time there was rapid, if you know what I mean.
So tell me what the mobile command unit was.
In there they had about half a dozen sets in touch with different places, but the main one was you're in touch with the three batteries, the command post of the three batteries, and you'd give out your orders to perhaps one command post, and the other one had okay it and everything like that. And even if you're doing a firing, and normally you'd have the colonel sometimes in there listening, and if anything went wrong, or if someone wasn't up to scratch, then that colonel would be on to that officer commanding it, and someone would get a right telling off. And even when a shoot's finished, he'd say, I want you all to rendezvous at this area, you know, and they'd all go there. And if they did that, then they was in trouble by the colonel, because you knew that something's gone really wrong, and he wants to find out what it is. So it was I've had a very active life, you know. And then they sent me I had to take tests for vehicles and everything like that.
When did you learn to drive?
I could drive before I went into the army. Of driving from when I was about 15.
So when did you actually get your your army qualifications, if you see what I mean, as opposed to...
What, to drive? Well, I suppose about 3 weeks after I went to the Royal School of Artillery. They was going to send me on a 10-week driving course so I said I can drive. And a fellow sergeant from the REME, he took me out on a 1500 weight. They give me a 1500 weight truck. I just went round a square, and they give me it to go out on Salisbury Plains for an hour. Give me the truck, no one with me. They said, right, you got that, you go out. And I went out on the truck, because I used to drive before I went into the army. And I went there, and then the sergeant from the REME took me out on a test on a 1500 weight Bedford. And I come back, and the officer said, how did he get on? He said, shut my eyes. He said, he's a maniac. That was the very words he said. And he said, he's passed. And the next day, I went out on a 3-ton truck. I had to go, and I had about half hour training on that. And then I went out and took a test. And the following week, they put me in a brain gun carrier. And I went out on the brain gun carrier. I had about 2 hours with an instructor, everything like that. And I passed out on that as well. And from then on, I was a driver wireless operator. So I didn't go for no tests. I never had a test all the time I was in the army driving. And that was it.
So what happens next then? You're on this mobile command post.
Yeah.
Well, command unit.
I was on there, you'd only go on there for a day. In our regiment, we had self-propelled guns,
Now tell me a bit about them, because we haven't talked about them at all. What were they?
Well, they were 25-pounders, but they were on a tank. They were on a tank. They were self-propelled.
Was it the Abbotts or
no?
Or later ones?
No, they was just... It was a tank with a 25-pounder with a big shield in front of it. And they were used a lot during the D-Day landings and everything. So they got the 25-pounder, which was could be a devastating gun. But you didn't have to stop and get a quad and limber and all everything. You've actually got it on that tank and you'd go in there. And the regiment was mostly, that was what they were, self-propelled guns. And I'd go on them as well with the chaps sometimes.
What do you think of them?
And, they were very good. But the only trouble was fuel consumption. I only did about 4 miles to the gallon. So, they were a really good gun. But while I was there, we had one misfire and three fellas got killed.
Do you know that were you there when it happened, or do you know much about it?
I was not far away.
What happened?
They had a misfire. They've loaded the gun, and as they fired, it was just a misfire and the whole complete thing blew up. This happened a few times in different places with artillery shells, you know. Sometimes, I don't know what happened, but it just got a misfire. But then I was put in charge of the OP. And
what do you mean in charge of the OP?
I was the main signaller in charge of the OP for my troop. And I'd go up with officers. And also, we'd go out on a quick fire. We'd have the guns following us, and I'd be in a bring gun carrier. And I'd have an officer with the artillery board with me. And we'd go along and he'd shout, "Stop!" So as I pull up, he jumps out, all the tanks get out in four, and then he'd get his he was training as well, and then he's got to give them all the directions and everything like that, you know. And this we used to do that practically every day. This was
so practice dropping into gun positions.
Yeah. And one day I pulled up a bit too sharp, and the officer went flying forward with the artillery ball all in the mud and everything. So I didn't go down too well that day with him. But that, on the whole, they were decent people, you know.
How were you fitting into union? How did you get all the other lads, the other signallers, and you know them?
I got in very, very well. And
make any friends?
Yes, I had more friends than enough, you know. I think there was all friends there, and a lot were from London and that in the regiment. And even local lads, I got in with them. And
what about the NCOs? Any characters or anyone that comes to mind?
Well, we had a few. We had one NCO. They used to supply him with a new pair of boots every 3 months, practically, because he'd sit down polishing his boots up every night, and he'd wear them out. He'd actually wear the leather out. You know, they were decent fellas. And then we got another one. He'd been a prisoner of war in Japan, and he used to get very excitable.
In what way?
Even if he'd see a mouse somewhere, he used to shout and everything.
So he was nervy?
Mm. And
because of his experiences?
Yeah. But, you know, there was some of them. They were very good. And then...
So no bad ones?
Oh, no. And
what about your officers with that unit?
The officers, they were excellent. And also, we had a Captain Miles, ended up Lieutenant Colonel, but he had started a motorcycle club, the first one after the war, and motorcycle display team, and I joined it. And I was in the motorcycle display team.
I'll come back to that. Stick with officers a bit. I mean, what were they like? I mean, did they mix with you? I mean, how standoffish were they all with it? I'll come back to the motorcycle.
The officers... In that regiment, were really nice. They mixed with everybody. And the Captain Davidson, he was a gentleman. And, you know, you could go to him, any trouble you got, he'd listen. And you didn't have to see, and even the Colonel Holtz, you'd walk along the road and, you know, you'd salute him and then stand and have a chat with you. He knew practically everyone in that regiment, all the officers, because he was... He wouldn't have to... So always comes the colonel, run away. You could pass him, salute him, and he'd always say good evening or something like that. He was excellent. You know.
Now tell me about Captain Miles set up the motorcycle display. Yeah. Now, could you ride the motorcycle already?
Yeah. And Captain David Miles, he'd got this team, motorcycle club going, and we have to realise that it was just after the war and there wasn't much motorcycles going in days, and we had to make up the bikes wherever we could. And I had a 16H Norton, which had a valve lifter, and it was a big heavy bike, but we used to go all over Salisbury Plains in Tidworth and everything, training and everything.
Now what sort of things were you doing with the display team? I mean, how was it, how good were you? What sort of things?
We did everything you could possibly do, like a lot what they do there. We'd done the pyramids with about 10 fellas on, and that was with an old BSA 500. And one day it's just going along and it got all the fellas on it and it collapsed. The engine stopped and they've all collapsed. But the only thing was, the fella what was driving it, the pot went on his leg and scarred him for life. The hot pot, he couldn't get off in time and it burnt right into his muscle. And I was the clown of the team. I had to fall on and off the bikes. And some of the things there,
so
you know.
That's what you used to do then?
Well, they'd have an old bit of wood with a lump of, like an old board, and they'd tie it onto the back of the bike. And I used to go, and you didn't have helmets or nothing on them days. And they'd just drag me round and I'd fall off, or else I'd get on the bike myself and go past, and you'd find that someone would fire a gun, like all blanks, but there'd be a cloth, and as they fired, there'd be some bottles hanging up, and a bottle, some would be on a little bottle, you know, like in all the crowds, there'd be hundreds of people, because that was one of the things. There was, you know, after the war, there wasn't much entertainment. And then I'd go along and have a big old gun and I'd fire light and everything would happen and about all the shed would fall down and everything, you know, and it's maybe what's called it sort of thing, you know. And I'd be falling on and off the bikes and once I was going round and I'm being dragged round on this board and I fell off and it's going over like, and people thought it was brilliant, like, you know, because I've gone underneath it and everything, but it wasn't in the act. And I've got big bumps on my head and everything, you know. And all the people clapped. They thought that was part of the act.
Did you enjoy performing to big audiences? You know,
yeah.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was very good. And also, we had an old Japanese gun, a Japanese little field artillery piece. So what we used to do for the finale, we'd put sausages in it. And we had our own charge, what we could make up, because we had cordite and everything in the artillery, and they'd fire it. And out of the gun would come a big load of sausages and fly all up in the air and everything, and get a big clap and everything, you know. And it was really, I mean, this, I enjoyed my army life. And this is where things like this, one of the last shows we done was down at Warminster for the School of Infantry. And I reckon we were all mad. So, and Captain Miles, he was terrific. You know, he must have been about 6'3" or 6'4", and he'd sit on a bike and his legs would be stretched out. You know, he was that tall, but he could really ride a bike. But he'd give you, you had strict training, you know what I mean? But this bike, I had a valve lifter on it, and as you let the valve go, it would explode, like, you know, you get a bang back. And, we'd be going along the road, going up to Tidworth or something, going along this old country lane, and you see someone standing there talking, and I just pulled a valve lifter out, which is as I went past, and bang, like, and they'd all jump, you know. And then another time, we've all gone round the road, and we're all swinging on the bikes, because there was nothing on the roads, hardly, and we nearly knocked the village copper down on his bike. He went mad. So, but it was good fun, you know.
Anything else about your time? You weren't with them long then, were you? How long? When did you say they were disbanded?
They was disbanded.
I mean the regiment, not the team.
Yeah, the regiment was disbanded. I think it was the beginning of 1948, but I still stayed on in the camp because the 5th Royal Horse Artillery came and took over, and I stayed on. Oh, before that, a few months before that, I was called into the major's office one day. I was called into the major's office, and he said, "Come in." So I went in, and I thought I was going to wonder what I'd done, you know. And the sergeant major was there. He said, "As from this morning, you are a bombardier. You've been promoted."
Now that's within a year of joining the army.
He said, "You've been promoted."
Is it a Lance Bombardier or Bombardier?
Lance Bombardier. And he said, "You'll be in charge of troop signals." And I was even put into the hut where all the sets were kept and everything, so I'll keep an eye on them.
Now, what difference did it make being promoted to Lance? I mean, it's the first rank, isn't it? But some say it's the most important, you know, thing in a career. What difference did it make?
It was, you know, and first morning I had to go around and wake all the barrack room up, you know. Well, two big barrack rooms. So I've got in there making a right noise. And they're all shouting at you, you know. I got more abuse that morning than enough. But it was all in good fun, you know what I mean? And I was called everything, you know. But on the whole, I, you know, because doing my training, basic training with the infantry, and a lot of them had gone straight into the artillery training. They didn't go into any other. So they wasn't in drills, you know what I mean? So, of course, we had a Saturday morning parade, and the sergeant major, he said, "Right, bombardier, you're taking a parade this morning on drill." Because, you know, I'd been taking people on drill, and anything went after that, he used to call me to get taken on drill. Because I'd done my drill with the infantry, where most of them had gone straight into the artillery.
And did you enjoy taking drill parades? What was it like?
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it. I'd call them, you know, call them everything. So, but on the whole, it was good, you know. You'd have a laugh. I'd tell someone. And one fellow called out one day, I said, and he kept talking. I said, "Right, you'll take the parade." Well, on the parade, you say, you're staying up, you know, and keep your head back and your shoulders square, you know. And this fellow, I said, "Right, you'll take the parade." So I got him out there, and all the blokes are laughing, you know. And he calls them to attention, and they're walking along, and he said, "Right, keep your head square. Instead of keeping your shoulders square and your head back," he shouts, "keep your head square." And I'm saying, "You're the only square really get round here, you know." And this was a typical... Oh, it's all right. I thought it was the top of the pen. Yeah, and this was typical... what it was, you know, and it was a laugh, you know, a lot of the times. I mean, if there was an officer on the parade, then I'd make sure that no one would do it, you know, because I would be a bit so. But on the whole,
did it change how you were with the lads?
No.
Were you still one of them? I mean, was it still,
yeah,
you know, was it still Mick and Bill?
Oh,
and
yeah, Bill? Yeah.
You're still on first name terms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No resentment?
No, I got on with everybody.
Now, did you have a junior NCO's mess?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
We had a junior NCO's mess, and you'd all go into that, and it was very good because that would give you a bit more insight into army life, because you'd have a lot of the people, like all war veterans and things like that. They'd be in there, and it was just mixing with people and everything like that. And then with perhaps once every couple of weeks, you'd have what they call a smoker.
Now, what's a smoker?
A smoker is like perhaps a Saturday evening, only the junior NCOs in there, and you've all put money in over a few weeks. You know, you might have to put, say, threepence a week in, and this would go, and this would buy food, buy you some food and everything like that, you know. And in the meantime, before this, you'd been, you could go there and you could wear civvies up to that point, and you find a lot of people in civvies. And you'd go in there and as a smoker, and then you'd have the local talent, some of them could sing, you know. And we have one fella and he'd been in the army 16 years, he was still a Lance Jack, but they give him that for, you know, and things like that. And he got up and he started to sing a song, and after about 10 songs, someone threw a net over him. After about 10 verses, you know, get him off. And but it was good fun. And
were any of them any good?
Some were excellent. We had one fellow there, he used to sing Italian opera, and he was very good. You had just an ordinary mic, you know, no sound effects or nothing, but he was really good. He'd get a big clap, you know. Then you get another one, he'd get something thrown at him, you know, a pillar or something, you know, and everything.
And what about you? Did you have a turn?
I could yodel them days, and I used to go up and sing and yodel, because I used to do that in the pubs before I went into the army, you know.
Where did you learn to yodel? What did it come from?
I used to listen to Big Bill Campbell before the war, you know, or during the war, Big Bill Campbell and his hillbillies. And they used to have High and Sigh, and a few people on there, they used to yodel, you know. And me and my friend, Stevie, we used to go into a pub, and I'd start singing and everything. I'd be about 15, 16, and I used to love life. And, you know, start singing and everything, and then I might sing some other song or anything like that, you know, and I'd go into Sorrento and all things like that, you know. But
and you did this in the army as well? Well, the yodeling. Was it mainly the yodeling?
And I used to play mouth organ as well.
And how did they react to your yodeling?
In the army,
I mean.
Oh, it was good, you know. And I might get a bit of bread thrown at me or something, you know, but in the smoker, it was all in good fun, you know.
And what about drinking, Alice? Was there much drinking done in the, in the mess?
Oh, yeah, there was. And
did you drink by then?
I used to drink, but not too much, you know what I mean?
What would you drink?
I'd drink perhaps a pint of beer just to be sociable and things like that.
But what about some of them? They drink a lot more.
Oh, yeah, some of them you carry them back. You know, why not? I've had to carry my mate back to the billet. He just flaked it right out, you know. So I put him over my shoulder, put his cap in my pocket and carried him back.
Is that quite common, lads who drank that much, or NCOs?
No, it wasn't common, you know. You get them have a little bit too much, some of them, you know, go along and you're picking yourself up out of the bushes or something like that, you know. But
so you were just a pint or so, man, but some of them would drink a bit more and one or two times they got completely drunk.
Yeah. But I must tell you one thing what happened in that regiment, if I can. We had some guardsmen in there. They were put out of the guards, like more like undesirables, wouldn't conform with the guards. We had about half a dozen in our camp. Well, our old Colonel Holtz, he got a little boxcar, one of them little Austin boxcars. I think it was about a 1936 model. And he felt so proud of it. And he'd come out of the officer's mess one day, and his car was upside down, and they reckoned that it was the guardsman come through the night before and tipped his car upside down. So you can imagine all the oil and everything. He couldn't prove it was them, but they were all pleased with themselves, you know. And, of course, it had to go into the workshops and be all thoroughly cleaned and everything like that. But these six guardsmen, they did used to cause a bit of problems in the camp, and they was slung out of the guards camps, you know. But you've got people like that. We also had a fella, he was a really decent fella, and yet he had done 4 years for armed robbery, you know, and you wouldn't think nothing of him, you know. And it was all, you got what I call the spice of life, all different types.